I can be a winning Ryder Cup captain away, so is an exceptionally big deal, and it adds a lot to my legacy.
For the best Ryder Cup build-up reaction and exclusive interviews, go to otbsports.com/golfweekly and become an official friend of the pod now.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
7:30 Friday morning. Very welcome along to OTB AM, and what a show we have lined up for you over the next couple of hours. And what are we getting to sport that lies ahead? It's all obviously hooked mainly around what's across all the back pages this morning, which is the Ryder Cup coverage. So we'll get into all of that. Plenty of guests coming up to talk about that, rugby and more beyond as well. So I'm here. Owen Shehan is there. Good morning to you. Owen is Shehan Hannan.
This is a disgrace. What's Adrian, happened? I'm supposed to be asleep still on a Friday morning at this time. This is farcical. This is an absolute farce.
Shehan stranded in Paris.
I got a bad feeling as I slowly combed through Twitter yesterday afternoon/evening, and I saw the plight that Owen Shehan was in. And
hey, Ryan,
not good.
If you could delay your 6:40 out of Beauvais by even just a few minutes, I'd be forever grateful and will never fly Aer Lingus again. Traffic in the city is woeful. Please do us a solid, says Owen at 4:03. Ryanair, all over the banter. Us right now, after being asked to do something other than tweeting a funny, with some sort of a gif there that I presume is some dude dancing. And that was it. And Shehan, I mean, it was looked like himself and a couple of other plonkers who had also got stuck in the woeful traffic. Didn't quite make the flight, or they didn't get to the airport roughly in time. And nice one from Cian Fahey there, pointing out that, you know, it was another injustice done visited upon the Irish at the hands of the French. I mean, it was an Irish airline, but yeah, I'm sure it was all manned by French people who were just looking to do another one on us. But that was him approaching. For everybody who's watching us this morning, Owen's shot out the window of a lot of blank fields as he approached the airport with, as he said, I think a few minutes later, just a couple of moments to go. Game over, he says. This was after the flight was about to take off. You could just see the tail of it there. Some staff member said something about me not having priority for the size of my gear bag, and it's held the whole thing up. Nothing, of course, to do with the fact that he got stuck in Mojo's traffic. Safe journey, Ryanair passengers. Safe journey, Ryanair passengers that are still in the airport. So, I presume he's still there, Shane. Do we have any update on what's...
I saw the latest photos I saw was he was on a plane at Charles de Gaulle, so he clearly had no more trust in or faith in Beauvais this morning. But the best comment I saw was someone on Twitter pointing out, is it true that Netflix have already been in touch about this saga and that Jerry Gilroy is in line to play a security officer at the airport, refusing you entry to the gate as the airplane closes its door? And Joe Malloy obviously is the airport announcer.
Charles de Gaulle, one of you'll be a man who appreciates a good airport chain.
Oh, I love a good airport. Charles de Gaulle is
one of the world's
huge
greatest
airport, and it would seem the more obvious airport to go to in Paris, because Beauvais might as well be.
Beauvais is basically in Germany.
Essentially is, but Owen didn't learn his lesson. That's something that we all fear happening. But a lot of people giving him sympathy, Adrian, and saying, "Oh, you poor fella, you missed your flight," but he gets to spend an extra night in the City of Love in Paris, so we can't feel too sorry for him, really, to be fair. He's got the baguettes, he's got the red wine. I'm sure he had a good night last night to finish off the saga. But yeah, it set Twitter alight, I think, last night. A lot of people who didn't even seem to know who Owen was or who Ryanair were that were involved across the Twitter sphere. So it really, really got
a lot
people
of people
talking.
Did you say a lot of people don't know who Ryanair were?
Those people, Jane, I know you've just
been literally dragged out of bed to come across the show.
There was one American guy who had commented something to that effect, that I don't know who Owen Shehan is, don't use Twitter much, don't know who Ryanair are, but I want to know what happened here. So, I mean, some people learned a lot last night following this saga. But yeah, Netflix special is on the cards, hopefully.
I mean, you'll be well aware that, and as we see, there's his current flight path. He's over the Irish Sea, just winging his way into Dublin at some point soon. He's, for some reason, they seem to be avoiding the flight path that everybody else is taking, but they've gone on their own. Conditions have dictated. It could be a bit windy out there. Charles de Gaulle, Shane, you'll know, was the place that the original set for the Terminal Man. Was that what the movie was called?
That is correct.
Tom Hanks movie.
One of the great movies as well.
Well, the movie was shite, was my view. I'm sorry, Shane, right? But it was hooked. It was obviously all based on a real story. I don't know if you're familiar with the story, but this, it was hooked, and I would say very loosely on a real story. And the guy who was actually involved in it was stuck in the airport. I mean, I read his book and he wasn't as stuck so much as sort of had stuck himself there. And even though he'd been offered plenty of opportunity to get the hell out of there, was still living on a bench. In the people who've been to Charlotte Gall be familiar with that sort of circle thing towards the bottom of that, down at the food court. He lived on a bench there with all his belongings stacked up against the wall, and he would sit there and people would come over and buy him a coffee and he would go and chat to them. I know this, Shane, because after one of the I can't remember, was it a Euro qualifier, a World Cup qualifier, myself and Graham Little, who is a Sky Sports News and I think maybe was UTV, some other outlets back in the day, swung by Sir Alfred and bought him a coffee. He didn't have, I think he might have been Iranian by birth, have amazing English, and we'd coaxed him over at the promise of a coffee and a bit of a chat. And like, this was a great novel. As I said, I'd sort of read his book. We got into a bit of a chat, didn't really tell him why we were there. And what he did manage to communicate to us after a few minutes, that he really hated journalists. So we made our excuses, Shane, and got the hell out of there. But a lovely man.
That's a good story to have. Like, no, that's a movie. No, Viktor Navorsky, I think, is the character that Tom Hanks plays from the fake country of Krakoja. But I think maybe Damian Lewis might be the best actor to play Owen. Maybe when this one goes to the big screen, I don't know.
Is it the ginger thing? Is that
possibly? Yeah, like there's a bit of a familiarity look there. Like Catherine Zeta-Jones, I know, was in The Terminal. Maybe she'd take a call and kind of play some female interest in this one as well. Stanley Tucci, he was excellent in The Terminal, I thought. So
you said female interest there rather than love interest. Interesting.
Love interest. Sorry, yeah, well, Owen would be interested in her. We'd see if it's reciprocated in the movie. But
well, we do hope to speak to the man himself at some point or another. I mean, he is over the Irish Sea at the minute, so we might catch up with him in a little bit. The other big, and if anybody's got any great sort of wishes for him to send across, or like what an absolute plonker you are messages, we are open to all of that good stuff, so do lash them into us. The other big thing, Shane, obviously, that we were all glued to last night, it kind of, to be honest, the opening ceremony being on at 10 o'clock, I'd been watching the general Ryder Cup build-up on Sky yesterday evening, and literally at 9:59 realised that the opening ceremony was starting at 10 o'clock. I could not have been more excited. This was like, it's live sport. This is grist to the mill, Shane, obviously, coming into a show like this morning. I was buzzing for the Ryder Cup. It totally burst my bubble. Like, you know, cut the thing in half. It was, you always expect it to be cringe, right? But it was just shite.
It was like, it was next level. It was next level cringe. I was the same as yourself. I tuned in at 10 o'clock and was hoping for a level of cringe that made it bearable to watch. And yet they surpassed my expectations. But I still couldn't look away. Like the Steve Stricker starting to cry, saying he needed a few beers to get through the whole thing. I mean, look, I get the Ryder Cup's a massive deal for these guys to captain their country or continent. In the case of Harrington, it's a huge deal. But I mean, to watch some of the American guys sitting there with their sunglasses on, I mean, the fighter jets, perfectly timed overhead flyover as well. And Phil Mickelson with those glasses on, if he was any cooler, he'd have pneumonia, that man. He was just sitting at the back row there, just loving life. They didn't even take the sunglasses off the national anthem. I thought these Americans were patriotic, but no, they just went for it. They were too cool to even take
hand
the
glasses
off.
Hand on the chest, Shane, but too cool to take the shades off. Philly Mick, I kind of thought, was sort of sitting there going, this is bullshit. I really should be down there. I should be playing. I don't care how bad I am or what age I am. This is not me sat up here with this crowd. But like, look at it. It was more doze than dazzle. Let's face it. It was absolutely, it was a cringe fest and a bad one at that. And I think when you have more standing ovations than a wedding, it's just time to look at yourself deeply in the mirror. Yeah. Cut the thing in half. Get the speeches on. Get them over with. Like this guy, Rob Riggle, and I think he does a lot of that sort of, what do they call that, the roast stuff. He's, it's terrible, brutal, hackneyed crap. Just cut it in half. Get the crap over with. And then, I mean, they rush through the pairings. It's like the one thing that you're actually here for.
That was the reason we were there. And Rob Riggle, like, he's a funny actor, 21 Jump Street and all that, but he dragged the shite out of it, to be honest. Like, his mispronunciation of Xander Schauffele was one of my particular highlights. Plenty of US sports banter as well, you know, talking Chicago Bears and Green Bay Packers and boos and cheers from the crowd. There was a lot of that. Like, I had obviously chills up my spine when the the European anthem was being played, the well-known European national anthem that we all stand for every evening before bed, Adrian, and know the words.
Good tune. It's a good tune.
Good tune, surely. Good. I don't know what it is. I think it's a French tune. Maybe Owen can sing it for us a little later on. Yeah. But yeah.
I could be wrong here now, but I think it might be an Austrian ditty, Shane. But I mean, look at. No expert in the area. I mean, look, the tournament itself, it did really dampen our enthusiasm for the tournament itself, which is quite an incredible feat when you think about it. But it's like, it was funny. It really dawned on me as the teams approached up to the, whatever it was called, the stage. It's really the owl lads against the young fellas, isn't it? Like the European team really, it struck me at that point. There's a lot of greys going on.
Yeah, like when you see the likes of Lee Westwood standing there, you're thinking, geez, this is going to be tough for Team Europe. Even when you just compare like for like, man for man on the two teams, I mean, it's the Americans are so much stronger. But having said that, everyone is backing Team America. And we're gonna talk to Peter Lurie about it later on. And I know he on Golf Weekly was firmly behind a fairly significant American win, but the Ryder Cup doesn't go like that. It doesn't go to plan. We're hoping for something like 2012. I mean, it's going to be a cracking few days. And the pairings, look, I was disappointed to see Shane Lowry not included in the foursomes today. But the look on his face, like when they were introducing each player, when Harrington got to call each player's name, and the smirk and the smile on Shane Lowry's face just made the whole thing worthwhile. Like that just shows. And I know in the build-up, Lowry kind of spoke about how this is the highlight of his career, and for a man who's you know, he's won the Open, he's won the Irish Open as an amateur, he's had a stellar career already, but this shows what it means to him when he says this is the highlight, to be picked for Europe in his first Ryder Cup. So look, I can't wait for it. Like the opening pairing was, I think, the juiciest possibly of all of them. Maybe the speed, it was Spieth Thomas against the two Spaniards and Rahm and Garcia. Look, It's teed up nicely. I think it's 1:05 Irish time. Maybe it gets underway this afternoon. So some cracking pairings today. But we're on Shane Lowry watch and Rory McIlroy watch, I think, for the next few days.
Yeah, it is definitely disappointing that he's not. It's sort of understandable that he's not underway for the foursome straight out the gap. He'll come in at some point this afternoon. And even interesting listening to Stricker yesterday in the press conference. Are you going to see what you see in the foursomes and then potentially mix it up for the afternoon? And he was like, nope, made my selections, sticking with it. I don't know, it's a pretty fixed position to have. Like, if one of his players goes out and has an absolute bomb, like, barring, obviously, injury or something like that, obviously, he would be forced to change it. But if one of his players goes out and stinks the joint out, like, I don't know, I think you just got to say, you got to keep people on their toes as well by saying, look, here's the plan, but, you know, we'll see what we see and maybe things change. I don't know what Harrington's approach will be. We'll see as it plays out. But, yeah, really looking forward to seeing Lowry, particularly, as you said, the smile on the man yesterday when he went up on the stage. It was like, I know he said already getting picked for the Ryder Cup was like the highlight of his career, which, I mean, I don't know. I think it is one of those comments he's going to look back on and say, maybe not quite. But no, it's going to be an absolute belter for the weekend, and I'm going to try and take in as much of it as I possibly can. Do keep the comments coming into us, by the way, over the course of the morning, wherever it is you're listening to or watching us this morning. We'll have... we'll bring those to the audience this morning. Barry Manley pointing out, John Rahm is Basque, lads, not Spanish. He says, picking at the scab there a little bit.
Apologies, yeah.
And even the pairings, the top pairings that go out today, and it's like, the heavy hitters against each other. Like, I mean, I don't know that Sergio Garcia can be... He's there, obviously, on merit, and he will no doubt have a big impact for Europe this week. But like, when he's not in that company, like Rahm is the number one, the other three lads, exceptional players, hatfuls of majors. Sergio is definitely the one that sort of sticks out a little bit, but Harrington kind of alluded to himself in that he's there to guide Rahm about the course and be the kind of big brother character, I guess.
Yeah, and like, look, Harrington knows best, and there was no nerves. I didn't get any nerves from Harrington yesterday. And the fact that, look, obviously himself and Sergio Garcia have that beef, and yet he's still, he's turning around shaking hands with Sergio Garcia at the opening ceremony. Of course, he's going to do that anyway. But picking him in the opening pairing is a mark of respect, a mark of trust. The fact that he's put him with Rahm, like, look, you said it yourself, he's the record point scorer in the Ryder Cup. He's there probably on historical merit, but he loves this. He loves this tournament, and that's enough. Like John Rahm, world number one. I think it's a good pairing, and it's an interesting pairing. A lot of people expected probably the two Spaniards to play together. Like interestingly, watching the American coverage once the ceremony finished last night, there was a lot of digs being thrown towards Ian Poulter and his, you know, the fact that he might not suit this course.
Brandon Chamblee went through for a shortcut and said that of all the ball strikers in across either team, of all 24 players, he's 24th and by a distance.
And he started pointing out the fact that, you know, on a lot of holes, big holes, you know, Poulter's going to be putting, and it's, we know we probably trust Ian Poulter's putting, but like at the same time, there's a lot of holes where he's going to play a really important role. I think though, pairing him with McIlroy makes a lot of sense. You know, they're both hype men. They both will feed off the boos from the American crowd, and like it could be a stroke of genius from Poulter Carrington. I think that's the reason he's probably paired those two together. I know that Cantlay and Schauffele is not an easy pairing to come up against by any stretch, but I mean, pairing them two together, that's one of the foursomes that people will be tuning in for today and really saying, right, that's top of my list. I think it's the last one out, so it's certainly one to keep an eye on. But, yeah. Jesus, I don't know. Like, Poulter Carrington, he was quite robotic in his speaking yesterday, but I liked it. I liked the fact that he was robotic. I thought it, you know, it showed off an air of quiet confidence. He didn't look one bit nervous for such a big moment. I know he's played in the Ryder Cup before, but to captain Europe is such a huge achievement for him, and he's clearly not fazed by one little bit of it.
Well, as you said, the American fans and their boos are going to be, I think, big factors when it gets into the weekend, Shane, and the mashed potato gets cracked up up into the 10 zone. So we'll see, but really looking forward to it. The other thing I want to mention to you before we crack on, we've Alan Quinlan lined up a couple of moments' time. We're going to get stuck into him. Plenty of rugby talking points today. Your duathlon training, how's it going?
Reasonably well, Adrian, I have to say.
Oh, wow.
Reasonably well. Like I've been, I'm back playing. Like I was playing Gaelic there recently until our B Championship ended, and then starting playing soccer now again with Monaghan Town FC, and you know, going out for runs in the evening. I've rejoined my local gym. I'm going to rejoin the swimming pool now tomorrow. Like this is, I'm taking it seriously. I'm not. I'm not going to sit down and just rest my laurels and assume that I'm the favourite, which I already know I am. That brings with it a tad pressure, but pressure's for tyres, as we know, Adrian. This is what I'm born to do.
I'm really concerned now because this does not bode well for me. My exercise, and I'm trying to keep my Whoop, and it's all in partnership with Whoop, and we're doing the duathlon out of Punchestown it's just over 2 weeks' time now, which is more than mildly concerning. But the stuff that I'm logging on this shame when I'm out and about is like walking the kids to school. I'm like, hang on, kids, before we leave, I got to let Whoop know that I'm going for a walk. And I mean, I've got a 3-year-old and she ain't the quickest. So, you know, but I got to get it all logged. That's sort of, I'm desperately concerned now that I'm listening to you saying that you're basically training all the hours that God sends.
Well, this is whether I'm telling the truth or not. These are the mind games that, you know, have that impact. And hopefully it has an impact on the other lads listening in as well. Am I right in saying it's 2K run, 20K cycle, 2K run?
No, it's 3.2K run. 20k cycle with some serious looking verticals, and then right. You wrap up with a 3.2k run.
Okay, 3.2, right. That's, yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think if anyone wants the free tips out there, I think those shuttle runs, the little sprints out in the car parks or the back garden can help your longevity for, you know, 3.2 is quite a short distance, but if you can build up your stamina and your endurance doing things like that, that's just what I would do. Obviously, don't wear yourself out at your age, Adrian. Take it easy in the build up to this. But us young lads will hopefully fly the flag. It's about finishing and taking part, though, that counts, really, isn't it? It's not all about winning. Now, having said that, if I finish second, I'll be absolutely distraught. So there's just Tommy Rooney is gunning for me. Our producer here in OTBAM, he's absolutely gunning for me. And I know he's been trying to get in my head a couple of times on these Whoop chats before where we're discussing training and build up, and it doesn't work for me. You know, I don't get sucked into all that kind of mind game stuff. I just do the training, get on with it, and knuckle down and do your talking on the track.
Yeah, well, you are
the
form horse, so there's no question about it. You're sort of, you're by, in terms of the duathlon, you're by, you know, your parentage here are like Moses Kiptanui and Eddie Merckx. This is I mean, the field needs to watch out for you. And of course, Rooney is saying that he's injured. He's got a bit of a hamstring strain. It's, you know, he's getting his excuses in early. But I mean, look, one thing is for certain, Shane, is that you're going to win it and I'm going to finish last. So we'll bookend, bookend the team, I think, in that way. So yeah, look, that's, we're going to talk a little bit more about that later on as well. That's our Whoop Challenge coming up in a couple of weeks' time. And somebody on the group was asking the other day, is there going to be defibrillators on course? So I believe there's a full ambulance service, which is, I might certainly have to tap into at some point around the course. So you're watching OTB AM. Loads coming your way between now and 10 a.m. this morning. Brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. In just a couple of moments' time, we're going to talk to Alan Quinlan. And there's so much rugby to talk to him about. The start of the new URC season, the Ireland team under big pressure to deliver against Scotland tomorrow, of course, as well, and a tough start for Ronan O'Gara to the restart of the new rugby season. Martin Lipton's going to talk football with us. A couple of big fixtures going head to head tomorrow on the calendar. Two at 12:30, Chelsea City and United Villa, both out of the way early doors, and then he gets stuck into your Ryder Cup after that. I think that's the biggest thing out of that, and obviously a North London derby for what it's worth on Sunday as well. So we'll talk to Martin Lipton about that. Let you know what's happening across the back pages in just a little bit. I will let you know that one of the biggest stories is the confirmation of that rumour that had been doing the rounds about Paddy Talley being involved in the Jack O'Connor ticket for the Kerry manager's job. So that is a really interesting development, and it looks like there could be confirmation on that. There could be the white smoke will go up around Austin Stack Park on, it looks, at some point, maybe even over the weekend. So we'll tell you a little bit about that in just a few moments' time. Owen, is he home? Is he still over the Irish Sea? Where exactly is he? We'll hopefully speak to the man himself, talk to him about his sort of meandering journey home, and maybe even a little bit about that Kerry ticket. That's coming your way a bit later on. John Duggan looks ahead to the Ryder Cup, and again, we'll mark a card for all of that and bring you up to speed with all the very latest of stories from the world of sport elsewhere this morning. That's at 10 to 9. After that, we're going to talk more Ryder Cup. We've Peter Laurie joining us on the line of He of Golf Weekly fame, and we're going to talk to him to preview all of that. He does, as Shane said, come down on the side of America are going to whip our ass on that, and whether that's going to happen or not, we shall see, but that's very much the take of Peter Laurie. And then Dudley Stokes, he of Cool Runnings fame, was talking to Nathan last night at the show, and he will be with us. We'll play some of that before we leave you at 10 o'clock this morning as well. So all that is coming your way. We'll get stuck into the rugby in just a few moments' time. If you've any questions or comments for Quinny, whatever it is, ahead of a pretty interesting few days of rugby ahead, and lots of stories happening off the pitch as well that we want to talk about, they will all be coming your way. So that is that for now. Do keep them coming into us. But before all of that, and by the way, breaking news coming from Dublin Airport this morning. Shehan has landed. Yellow ticker across the bottom of the screen. He has arrived in Dublin Airport. It's 7:52. He was due to be in studio with me here about 2 hours ago, but the delay last night has meant that he's not. But Flight Radar is telling us that Shehan has landed. We'll have more as we get it. That's official OTB sources bringing you that news this morning. And we'll have more as we get it. We've got our man out at the airport, and he'll be there live videoing into us in just a little bit. So before any of that, and before we talk to Alan Quinlan, episode 20, by the way, of the Football Pod with Paddy and Andy, now available wherever it is you want it. First released on the OTB Sports app each week, and it is the best place to get it. So you can get it, the hop on everybody else, by downloading the OTB Sports app, and you get a notification then of the app going live. This week, the Football Pod bringing you their review of the 2021 season with their Team of the Year and 13 awards. Here's Paddy Andrews on his moment of the summer.
Well, Andy, if you're questioning yourself about picking two goalkeepers going up against each other in an Ulster final, I'm going to hazard a guess and say that Paddy Andrews is questioning himself for his own decision for the moment of the year. Paddy, what did you go for?
COVID, Tyrone.
No, you didn't. You went for Mayo beating Dublin.
Come on, Paddy!
Yes, no, we didn't. I did not go for it. Yeah,
oh, you did? Oh, sorry. I misread your message. I'll edit that later on. Ah, oh, shit.
Well, he's trying to trip me up all night.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't trying to trip you up there. I genuinely misread. So. You wrote it in the WhatsApp and I copied it in. I thought I must have, but I'm not putting that in. Okay. Paddy, quickly, your moment of the year.
No, I'm not getting sucked into it. Now, I went a bit of, I thought Brown pulling out of the championship, just in terms of an off the pitch thing, was incredible to hear. I remember it came through on Twitter, and you're like, this is not the mini leagues, lads. You can't just give a walk over under 10 Saturday morning type thing. Tyrone basically throwing it back onto the GAA.
Yeah.
It was such a unique thing. The GAA had done so well, I suppose, to run off last year's championship and get it done.
Yeah.
Even though it was at Christmas time with no fans, and to get to where they'd got to this season with no real setbacks. It was inevitable something was going to happen around COVID. And for Tyrone to turn around and basically say, yeah, we're forfeiting this, good luck. I thought it was an incredible moment. I thought it was brilliant because it just put all the pressure on the GAA, and the GAA, they kind of, they had to steed and give Tyrone what they were looking for. So yeah, a little bit off script, off the pitch, but I thought that was an interesting moment, to say the least.
Is there a saying that, like, sometimes you've got to be willing to lose it all to win it all? And they were just willing to give it away. They said, we can't compete.
That's like a Mariah Carey song or something.
Yeah, yeah, nice, actually.
Maybe Whitney Houston, perhaps.
Yeah, I like it. And, like, they just went and they were willing to, they said, put it, as Paddy says, back on the GAA. This is what's happening. Either wanted, you know, remember there was a one with Mikko. Remember Mikko said about the Kerry boys, well, if we can't wear these jerseys, we're not going to be there. And the GAA said, right, you're going to throw him. And it was another story. And they said, right, then 5 days before, it said, okay, you're allowed to wear the jerseys. And Mikko went up and went to Ireland. So, like, Joe, you know, they stuck to their principles, stuck to their guns. And Paddy said after the Ulster final, when Doer and Lowe, when they won it, when a manager wins something, now you can believe in them.
Mm.
But, like, when they stick to you and they trust you and they know you're a management of your word, and they were willing to just go, okay, we're giving it all away. And then, whoa, talk about the trust that they're giving them boys, you know?
That's the Paddy and Andy pod. And as I mentioned, you can get that first if you head along to the OTB Sports app and turn on your push notifications. And that is the best place to get it. Get the hop on everybody else, 24 hours hop, and then it'll be released across all channels. So it is time to turn to rugby. Alan Quinlan, good morning to you.
Morning, Adrian. How are you?
Flying the thanks. And the season here, obviously, about to get underway, so we're all excited. You don't give a toss about the Ryder Cup. You're like, give me, hook the URC into my veins, Quinny.
No, I do care about the Ryder Cup big time. I can't wait for it. I love it.
What's going to happen? The Owl Lads, the European Owl Lads, or the US Young Guns?
Well, it's they're obviously favourites to USA. You know, they're more players ranked higher up in the world rankings, but we've seen that over the years. Europe seemed to revel in that kind of underdogs situation. And hopefully they can. I just hope Shane Lowry we can see some emotion and passion from him and from an Irish point of view, and McIlroy. So it's exciting. It's always great. It's totally different for these guys mentally and playing as a team. And that's what excites people. So America are favourites. They're probably the foreign players going in. But as I said, that form goes out the window sometimes, you know, when they get into action in this. But it'll be exciting. It'll be something good to watch at the weekend.
It'll be absolutely cracking. Really looking forward to it. We've had the Magners League, Quinny, the Celtic League, the Pro 12, Pro 14. We might have had 16 at some point in there as well. They've all threatened to settle down at some point as tournaments. Like, be a credible Excuse thing me. That, bless you, that everybody could... It could stand on its own 2 feet and everybody could get behind. They threatened that, and at times maybe even were that, but it feels like there's been a lot of tinkering that's gone on over the last little while, and it kind of feels like the URC can't just be another shot in the dark here. It's got to work.
Yeah, you would think so. Obviously, there's no point in bringing in other teams and expanding the competition if it's not for the better of it. I think... Look, Adrian, I think everybody realised we've seen so many one-sided games over the last number of years. The Irish provinces have been pretty dominant, which is frustrating. I feel I'm sad that the Welsh at times are not that competitive, bar the Scarlets. I think, look, it's probably, and the Ospreys will probably say, and the Dragons and the Cardiff Blues will say, look, they've taken scalps over the years, but come the business end, they seem to fade away. It really affects them when their internationals are not playing. Their depth isn't as big. Mm. They probably don't have the same finances. And part of me is sad that the Welsh are not, you know, getting possibly two, three competing to get into Europe, and they're thereabouts at the business end of the table, business end of the year, I should say. So, you know, with this new format, there's going to be no games in November internationals and Six Nations. So it definitely gives the Welsh a better chance. And I think that's a good thing. I think splitting up into the conferences, you know, creates a little mini competition. We always had a goal when I played to be the best team in Ireland, win the Inter-Pros. And effectively, there's an Inter-Pro series there for Ireland. Wales, Scotland go into the, you know, with the two Italians, Glasgow and Edinburgh. And then you have the South African one. So I think it will enhance the kind of the domestic game here as well. A few question marks about some of the, I suppose, the bite and the intensity of our Inter-Pros in the last number of years as well. So, you know, it has to showcase something different. It has to bring a bit of different bit of quality. There's a lot of criticism from the Gallagher Premiership, from English journalists. The Welsh are losing interest as well. So we have to try and garner that interest again. And like I say, I would love to see the Welsh being strong again and having their top teams out and their, as many internationals as they can. The internationals are not going to play all these games, and a lot of them are, the South Africans won't see theirs till probably end of November, December, so, which is, there's nothing they can do about that, but hopefully we can see as many internationals playing as regularly as possible in the competition.
Yeah, and it does seem at least set up sort of in that way. The, like, South African interest in it, obviously part of it is to do with qualification for Europe from the Celtic nations or whatever. The South African involvement in that sense is slightly odd, but them obviously bringing over the best teams, the best players on a consistent basis. Like, one of the biggest criticisms of the version that went before was that they weren't the versions of the teams that you want to see coming over, competing week in, week out. Like, if at any point that starts to diminish, and I know, look, it's behind now, it's RTE and TG Car are going to broadcast it, and that's always been a criticism of it, that people weren't sure where to find the games. But, like, at a core level, I was listening to Declan McBennett on the League LOI Central podcast this week, and he was talking about the core product of the League of Ireland. Effectively, he was saying it's not good enough to warrant putting a lot of it on the TV in primetime slots where other programming might do much better, that the audience wasn't there for it. And, like, the same can be said of this, Quinny, if the best teams aren't being put out all the time.
Yeah, and that's the challenge. You left Premier out there and TG Carr as well, but I'm going to be doing some matches in Premier, yeah. So I have to give them a mention.
Give them a shout, dead right.
For subscribers to Sky, with that package, you'll get Premier. But look, it is great for the reality is, for this being going out free to air, and a lot of these matches free to air, is, you know, Premier will have every match, RTE, TG Cahir, BBC Northern Ireland, BBC Wales, all those. A lot of games will be put on, played free to air as well, which is great. And that's actually something that helps garner the interest, because if it's all on subscriber TV, it's more difficult, and it's the casual viewer will now tune in. And but the day that presents a danger in itself, you know, if they tune into a game and it's rubbish and it's one sided, you might lose them. But if the games are good, I just thought the Rainbow Cup last year kind of, even though it was. At the end of the season and in the middle of the pandemic and all that, and COVID was an issue, and I just thought there was a different kind of approach from the teams. I suppose they will be kind of doing everything in their power to play cup rugby and win points and most of the teams, but I just hope it brings a bit of enthusiasm and into all these teams as well. And the South Africans, you know, bring something different. We know that they're about their physicality, but hopefully the club sides here will be a bit expansive and try and throw the ball around a little bit. But if the product is bad, and the proof will be in the pudding, Edrin, you know, we're not going to get brilliant games every week. That's just the reality. But we want to see the internationals playing against each other. It's a reduced format. There's less games. That's why some of the weekends are freed up. There'll be an outright league winner. But I really like the conference scenario, where you get rewarded, and you get you're guaranteed a place in Europe if you top your conference. Does it make it more difficult? Look at the Irish conference, you know, with the four Irish provinces. Most likely, Leinster will top that conference pool. And then you've got Munster, Ulster and Connacht kind of scrambling to try and get in a top four then when the four qualifiers are taken out of it. So it makes it really, really tricky and interesting. And, you know, getting into Europe is really important for the Irish provinces. But hopefully the rugby will be good, and that the product will be different, a little bit different.
Quinny, hopefully, you mentioned the fact that there's fewer games. Hopefully that means that at least, you know, the games that you do play will mean more. I just wanted to get your take on Andy Friend's criticism of the format. He's been kind of speaking about the fact that essentially, you know, as he's put it, if we had it last year where the top four teams were the four Irish provinces, he said, to me, it's a bit unfair that they're not the ones who are going to be representing in the Champions Cup. Like, are there some flaws to the format, or is it just the case that with a new tournament like this, it's going to take a little bit of time for head coaches to get used to it and for it to bed in?
Yeah, I can understand straight away his issue with it, because for obvious reasons, as he says himself, if you know, the four of them were at the top four last year, they would have all four Irish provinces would have qualified. The problem we have, that's great from an Irish point of view, Shane, but Wales, Scotland, and Italy to a lesser extent, I think they probably don't say much about it, but I know the Welsh sometimes are frustrated and they're sick of the same old, because they're envious and they can't get into Europe and they want to play those games in Europe. I remember Osprey's been incredibly strong over the years when I played, and you know, the Scarlets have probably been the ones that have been in Europe and doing pretty okay in the last probably 7 or 8 years. But other than that, you know, Cardiff don't make it, the Dragons don't make it, and they want, I think the idea of it is to have a more of a geographical kind of representation, which is a little bit unfair when it's not on merit. So essentially, and this, you have to get your head around this, like I said, Leinster, I would probably pick four teams that will make it. It'll be Scarlets, Leinster, Edinburgh, and probably the Bulls. So if you take those four teams out of the, I'm just saying, they're possibly going to win their conferences. Now, there's no guarantee with any of that. So if you took the four of them out, you then have 14 teams left, and you've got to be in the top four there. And that's the challenge for Connacht. But if they're good enough, then it's a shootout from there to make that top four. In a second chance, essentially, and it makes it a bit trickier, because so I can understand his frustration, but it is what it is, and it's different, and it's something different, and I like the fact, I like these conferences as well. You know, we always, as I said, when I played with Munster, would have been be the best team in Ireland, and every province probably have this, and beat your local rivals, win the Interpros, and we'll have a lot of that, and hopefully a lot of meaningful games that there's a qualification for Europe at stake here.
Just while you were talking about it, and I want to come to talk to you about Ireland-Scotland in a minute, but just as you were talking about the quality of the games and the quality of the division, just looking at Ronan O'Gara's start to life in the top 14, it's been a tough opening three games from Quinny, 0-3. Now, that's on the face of it, and then you scratch beneath that and you see the quality of opposition that he's had to play and how close they ran John O'Gibbs, Claremont, obviously, last week. But this is tough now. You know, this is the reality, I suppose, of the week-to-week rugby, that the Hollywood stuff at the end of last season, this is back to earth with a bang now.
Yeah, it is. I think the frustrating probably one, and, you know, you always look at your fixtures and coaches sit down and they realise the reality of certain fixtures that are going to be really difficult, and they've been presented with really tough games at the start. At home to Toulouse, away to Racing, and away to Clermont, always going to be difficult. You kind of deal in reality in coaches' meetings, I think, and I've heard this from many coaches. You kind of look at a maximum and minimum number of points that are attainable, and where what's the reality here out of a certain block of games. So the one that would have probably frustrated him and upset him was the home game. You know, you want to win your home games, even though it's Toulouse and they're incredibly strong, and it just makes it harder then when you're away to Racing and away to Clermont in the next two games. And you know yourself, pressure and results and a little bit of luck can desert you at times. So it's going to be tricky, absolutely. Yeah. And when you kind of look at it, three games, three losses, it looks bad for Rog and for La Rochelle. But like you say, when you scratch away the surface, you see the teams they've played. But he's got to win this weekend against Biarritz, and they're at home, and that's an essential game. If they don't win that, then it's a different kind of pressure. It cranks up a bit more. Biarritz have started really well, and good Irish representation. James Cronin, James Hart, Dave O'Callaghan, Francis Ailey, the former Munster player as well, that are there. They beat Racing last week, 28-19 at home. So they're kind of up and running and have had a good start in the top 14. So it's a tricky game for Rog and La Rochelle, and they've got to bounce back. He's got to get a win from somewhere this weekend, because as I said, winning and losing become habits, and luck tends to go with you or against you when you're on either run, you know. Mm-hmm. So he's got to get back on track this weekend.
The irony of the fact that he needs somebody that can consistently kick the ball over the bar for him from Blaise Kicks is obviously,
it's,
I'm sure.
It's a huge problem, yeah, you know. Yeah, it's a huge problem. Yeah. And
yeah, well, look, we'll keep an eye on it. It's I'm sure it's going to be another fascinating story again as the season unfolds. Ireland-Scotland in Parma tomorrow, Quinny. It's a big tie, obviously a crucial tie for World Cup qualifiers. Four teams, all locked on 5 points, one place up for grabs. So the connotations for Ireland are that they need to win and better the result of the winner from the other game, which is Italy against Spain. And they might do all of that, but it's not cut and dried.
No, it's not. A bonus point win against Scotland and a winning margin by more than 11 points guarantees 11 points better than Italy, greater than Italy guarantees them. So you'd imagine if Ireland do win with a bonus point, they'll be in that territory. Let's hope they don't look back with regret and frustration and anger at that result in the first game. Against Spain when they lost. I think they were so much better last week and better defensively, which was probably the key. But the challenge this week now is when you've got to go out and get bonus point wins, they might need a bonus point win. Spain could beat Italy. It could be a narrow game. There might be no bonus point win for Spain. It's essentially could come down to points difference here, and it will come down to points difference, I think. But Spain are not out of it either. They could beat Italy and could be in the mix and have two wins. They're all level at the moment, and the three of them are level at the moment. So offensively, the challenge this week is to try and, you know, manage the game. And first and foremost, they've got to make sure that they get their fundamentals right, their set piece and their breakdown and their accuracy, and get the result against Scotland. If you start thinking bonus points too early, the advantage you'll have here as well, which is a massive advantage, and I think it is unfair on Spain and Italy, is the Ireland-Scotland game is on afterwards. So the Irish women will know what they need to do, which is unfair in a sense. It's great for the Irish girls, but they've got to focus here and make sure they don't slip up against Scotland. They've beaten them pretty regularly in the last number of years. But they've got to make sure that they get a result first and a performance then to go with that, which merits putting them in that position where they can take it out of everyone else's hands, get a bonus point win by more than 11 points. And it'll be great if they can do make it and make up for that loss in the first game.
Yeah, well, failing to qualify might the post-mortem from it might make everything that's happened over the last couple of weeks with the negative stories around women's rugby look like a molehill. I think there could be a bit
just get the ball to Baby Parsons and Amy Lee Murphy Crowe.
Yeah.
They have a lot of pace there. So look, hopefully it'll be great for them. And I think they put wear their heart in their sleeves, and they deserve support. And you know, that game is on at 5 o'clock tomorrow, and it'll be fantastic if they can wrap up qualification. If they don't get there automatically tomorrow, they still have a chance in a repechage. So let's hope they get the job done tomorrow and get a performance to go with it as well.
Yeah, good stuff. You're back on Monday. We'll pick through the weekend's action. Thanks, Quinny.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Alan Quinlan on the line there, talking all things rugby. It's 8:15. You're watching RTÉ AM. And a reminder, by the way, this week is European Week of Sport, which aims to promote sport and physical activity in all countries across Europe. The week is for everyone, regardless of age, background, your fitness level, with a focus on grassroots initiatives. The aim is to inspire Europeans to hashtag be active on a regular basis and create opportunities in people's everyday lives to exercise more. To celebrate all of that, and all this week on Off the Ball, from 7 o'clock each evening, we're giving away a €100 Sport Ireland campus voucher every evening, as well as an overall prize which includes a family coaching session with some former Olympians, which is a pretty special prize, it has to be said, at the facility there, as well as behind the scenes tour of Sport Ireland campus and much, much more as well. So be sure to tune in tonight from 7 o'clock to check out all of that. All of that for more details on that. Are we taking ads and then we're going to? Oh, we're going. Okay, we have our surprise guest on the line, Shane. It's only about 12 hours after you were supposed to land, but you're home.
I am. I'm checking in for a day's work now, guys. I mean, that's how it works.
Bit late, buddy.
Thanks, a million, Shane Hannon, first of all, for doing me a solid.
I should be in bed, Owen. I'm looking at the clock here. This is taking away from my Friday morning sleep. But no, it's fine. It's fine. Look, you just owe me one, okay?
Was it the Woges traffic or was it bad planning?
It was both. It was very, very bad planning. I have the propensity to be an absolute idiot sometimes, and the idiot side of my brain certainly came out in full flow yesterday. It was like at the last day of being around, so all sort of logistical sense had gone out the window. What they could have stopped the blow yesterday was that I wasn't the only person who made the same mistake. I posted that photo on Twitter of the two Canadian guys who were also trying to get back to Dublin. Those guys are RCSI students, so there are brain surgeons who made the same mistake as I did. So, you know, I'm okay with that.
Oh, and they were also two schleps who didn't sort of plan their day properly. I mean, regardless of, you know, what's going on upstairs. But come here, you were out and about last night. You made the most of it.
I did not. I went straight to bed. The amount of time it takes to get from one airport to another is stupid. And yeah, I did not make the most of last night at all, actually. I got back into the city and then left the city again and got an airport or a hotel as close to the airport as humanly possible. Set 14 different alarms and got up at around 4:30 this morning with about 3 hours to spare before the flight because I wasn't going to do this on back-to-back days. What I don't understand is why you're saying this is a special guest this morning and people are like a little bit compelled by this. I don't understand that really. Do people not miss flights all the time and people end up messing up like I did, or is this actually
normally they just don't turn up at all for work, I think is probably the key point here, Owen. I mean, people miss flights all the time. You need to give yourself a little bit of what you need to do is, right, make sure that you're not going to see any major sort of tourist attractions, but you're not creaming the last out of, you know, your holiday. You're giving yourself enough of a buffer on to get yourself out to the airport. What was it that actually that result that you had to desperately squeeze the last out of your trip to Paris with that made you late?
When you look at a boarding card and it's like a 6:40 p.m. flight, you never think you're going to sleep in for a 6:40 p.m. flight, but it's kind of half what happened. But it was poor planning, to be quite honest with you. I did wake up a little bit too late in the afternoon yesterday. I did take my time, and it was only really when I started to navigate my way back to the place where you get the bus to the airport that I realized I was in a spot of bother, because what I had done was in the middle of the trip I changed location to go experience a different part of the city for a little while, and I hadn't realized that when I got from that shuttle bus to the first accommodation, things were smooth. But by moving to a different location, getting back to that shuttle location was not so smooth. And hence, I missed my shuttle bus that was for the Dublin flight. So it was mostly people going to Malta on my bus. But wow. Unfortunately, unfortunately, the Dublin crew on that bus just had no luck. So Air France all the way this morning.
Well, you see, you changed airport, you changed airline, so it all worked out. But like, I feel like a lot of people were invested because of the back and forth between yourself and Ryanair. Like, it was even people who, as I said this morning, Owen, had no interest or no prior knowledge of maybe yourself or maybe the whole situation were hanging on every word. Like, there's talk of a Netflix special. A couple of people hoping for that to happen. Like, I kind of mentioned Damian Lewis might be a good fit for playing yourself in the movie if that comes about. Who would you pick as someone to play yourself in this particular movie?
Yeah, Damian Lewis is a really good shout, Shane. He ticks the handsome box, and the ginger thing helps as well. But
Fassbender,
that's really
surely.
Or for Fassbender, you know, I mean, he can nail it as well. I mean, either of those guys, I think, would do a job and would be more than capable of doing it. So I'm on board for that, for sure. I don't know. Like, I mean, fair play to the Ryanair admin for talking to me, but not so much to Ryanair for not letting me on the plane. That's the frustrating thing when you're standing outside. It's kind of like that Arthur meme where you're grabbing onto the fence, looking inside, and unfortunately you can see the fully loaded plane and it's just sitting there, standstill. Cool. And it's a tiny airport and I could have got there in 2 minutes, but not to be. And there are many, somebody was tweeting me yesterday, asking me what are the learnings we can take away from this, and there will be a full comprehensive report into the failings of the last 24 hours, and we will take those learnings forward into the future.
Interestingly, amid all that shite, you did say at some point there a bit earlier that you wanted to go and experience a different part of the city. What was that? So you went to see something? Is that what you're saying? You like took a detour?
No, as in like I just changed my accommodation. Are you trying to get at?
No, there's something. There is definitely a layer of something that's going on in the background that we're not hearing about. Now that might be something you want to keep to yourself, and if that's the case, absolutely fine.
The reason why I changed the accommodation is because I was there for a week, so I was like, I'll do half the week in this part, half the week in that part, and that way you get two different experiences rather than just one. I mean, am I coming in with like a layer of intrigue now as a result?
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. Paris is like, it's a big old city, but the metro system is unbelievable. It's not like as if you need to hop hotels and, you know.
No, I guess not. Like, I mean, if you're trying to get at why was I late? Why did I sleep in yesterday morning? And yeah, of course. I met some people and we were out at a house in the suburbs of Paris. Like, I mean, that did happen. That's a fact that you can take on record, Adrian. But
excellent.
It still came down to bad. I still was back in my accommodation in plenty of time to sleep
back in
and get
my
up.
Accommodation. What were you staying in? I love the way you can't just describe it as either a hotel or a hostel. I was back in my
I was back in my Airbnb. In plenty of time. The bottom line here, guys, is that this was a logistical failing on my part. There is no one else to blame. No people to blame except for me here and obviously Ryanair.
I'm also told that, and this is maybe the most interesting part of this entire conversation, that you are under pressure to get a bus so that we have to let you go. And I mean, you know, I'm very tempted to keep the conversation going for the next while to sort of, you know, but yourself and Bus Aaron can have a bit of an over and back on. Listen, we thank you. We don't thank you for not turning up for work today, but we thank you for taking the time in the middle of your busy day and, you know, the logistical nightmare you've had over the last 24 hours to check in with us.
Is that a day's annual leave now?
I'd be expecting the request into my inbox. I might actually check okay on this one.
I mean, I did a good 15 minutes work today, guys. Shane Hannan, you're a legend. Thank you so much.
Cheers,
box ticked. Good man. Safe journey onward. Is that what they say? Is that what you He's there. He's gone. He's gone. Good man, Owen. Thanks, William, for that. After all your drama. Right, it is 8:23. It's Friday morning. You're watching OTBAM. We've lots to come. We're going to talk golf with Peter Lowry in just a little bit. We're going to talk. John Duggan's got the latest as well in the world of sport and live sport and everything that's happening tonight. League of Ireland, of course, and plenty more besides as well. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit Ryder Cup with him as well. So that's all on the route. We're going to talk football next with Martin Lipton. OTB AM. And a very good morning to you. 8:28. It's Friday's OTB AM with you till 10 this morning. Lots still to come. Plenty of golf chat en route as well. In the ad break there, you heard Yapstam in conversation with Nathan. The latest OTB roadshow brought to you with thanks to Cadbury Ireland and Cadbury FC. You're going to get the full show on the OTB football podcast, by the way, on our feed there, or indeed up on our YouTube channel. Keep an eye out for Stephanie Roach and the former Manchester United kitman Albert Morgan, who also feature in that show. They'll be en route. You won't know the name, most likely, but you'll definitely know the face. So go ahead and check that out. Now we're going to continue on the football theme. Delighted to say Martin Lipton, head of football content at The Sun, is on the line. Good morning to you, Martin.
Good morning.
We had Paul McGrath on the show during the week there. I was just listening to Yapstam. I don't know if you heard the comment just during the ad break there. Paul McGrath was asked whether he was going to go with, whether he would pick to be alongside him at centre-back, Vidic, Stam or Ferdinand. And he went Stam. Good call?
Well, I think you'd have all three, wouldn't you? Or could have any of all three. They're fantastic players. I mean, it's interesting, of course, the fallout with Fergie and Stam was something that set United back for a year or so. It was a mistake, I think, that both sides recognise that. I think as a partnership, Vidic and Ferdinand worked really, really well. As an individual centre-half, to be fair, I'd have any of them. I think if you wanted, depending on the type of game, if you were going to dominate the game, you'd want Ferdinand because he'd carry the ball. If you were on a defensive game and you had to stand firm under pressure, either the other two were so resourceful and resilient that you'd want one of those.
Yeah. The Ferguson point is an interesting one in that, and I was watching the documentary on Prime during the week, so it's sort of top of the head, but the there were a lot of fallings out. Paul McGrath was obviously another one that he shifted out of the club. It almost feels like when you're going to make a number of those calls, you're probably at some point, because most of them were fairly controversial. Like, I know the Keane one, obviously, he was coming towards the end of his career, but there was Beckham and other players who fans might have felt were actually going to still continue to add something to the club over the years. But it was Ferguson's, that was part of his makeup, really, that he was going to have that churn, and sometimes you're going to get it wrong.
Well, I think there was for a long time there was a political party in Mexico, which is the Institutional Revolutionary Party, and I always felt that was a way of summing up Fergie's reign, that he was an institution, but he would continually overhaul to refresh and renew the team, and even if people felt it wasn't a good idea, he felt it was right and necessary. There was a need for bloodletting sometimes to keep people on their toes, to change the dynamic. It's why he kept on changing his number two as well, because people didn't realise that players need a new voice to hear.
Yeah. That force of personality, Martin, in some ways, which maybe brings us on maybe to the football this weekend, will probably never wield that type of power again, I suppose, the way clubs and businesses are structured now, that it just seems very unlikely. And that might not be the worst thing in the world, I guess. Equally, it seems less likely by the month, and interested for your take on this, that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going down in the pantheon of any of the world's greatest managers. He's good at United, I guess, compared to what's been there before, but United surely at some point will want better than good.
Well, it depends if they win things. If they don't win things, they'll change. If they do win things, they'll stick. There's a desire of the fans for him to do well. If you look at the results alone, if not always the performances, it's hard to argue that they've done badly. You know, they've done pretty well this season. The one blip, obviously, was the Young Boys game. But where's the trophy count? You know, it's the charge that's often laid at Tottenham's door. With the United's resources, I think it's an even more legitimate one. They've got these players who cost fortunes. Good players, not denying that in any way, shape or form. They've got Ronaldo now. They've got Fernandes. They've got Sancho. They've got Rashford. They've got a lot of players. They've got Maguire and De Gea. They should be winning things. And if he doesn't win something this season, I do think it'll be difficult, even for United to stick with it. And, of course, the other factor is it will be a new chief executive at United at the end of the season compared to now. It'll be Richard Arnold rather than Ed Woodward, and Woodward was more personally invested in the success of Solskjaer.
And that could put him in danger. Do you go with the Simon Jordan on TalkSport during the week saying that United are, he wasn't saying they weren't an elite club, he was saying they're not now an elite team for the very reason about the trophy cabinet being bare for the last, whatever it is, 4 or 5 years. Do you go with that?
No, because they're still the biggest club in Britain. They're an enormous football club with a huge cachet. And they are finishing in the top two and three every season. And actually, you know, it's not as if they're falling to seventh or eighth and, you know, out of the frame, which you could argue is a situation at Arsenal and potentially at Spurs. United are in a dip. There's no question. But they're knocking on the door to come out of it. And it only needs one trophy for all that to change. Now, I'm not saying they're going to get it. And I think it'll be very difficult for them to win the title this year. I think they're in they're probably the fourth team in a four-horse race. Mm. But full favourites win, not that irregularly, as we know.
Yeah.
Martin, just to ask you about sorry to interrupt you, Adrian, the North London Derby, like it's our live game and off the ball this Sunday afternoon. And I know both have had probably mixed starts to the season so far, and Spurs' record at the Emirates really isn't the best. But amongst the fans, Arsenal and Tottenham fans, like is it the same lore and kind of, I guess, grit around the North London Derby, or has it lost some of its allure over the years?
No, I think it's still as strong as ever. I do feel, even as a Spurs fan and someone without any hair, as you can see, it's the equivalent of two bald blokes fighting over a comb at the moment. But nevertheless, there's no doubt that it means. I saw something on social media yesterday from Arsenal fans saying, come on, make sure you buy your tickets wherever you get them from. We've got to turn it into something hostile. This is the North London Derby. And it's the same view on the other side of the Seven Sisters, other end of the Seven Sisters Road. It means an awful lot. And irrespective of the actual merits of the teams compared to other sides in the league, it counts. This matters. It really, really does.
Like, is Arteta under pressure if he loses this game? Like, I know they've won the last couple of games. Well, one was in the Cup midweek, but he's one of the managers under severe scrutiny, and certainly with the start to the season, the first couple of games, certainly that magnifying glass really focused down on him. So a couple of results go against him, he could be certainly under severe pressure.
I think if they were to lose three or four again, that would change. One-off game losing now would be disappointment for Arsenal. But the immediate crisis has been quelled by those results, particularly the win at Burnley, when they withstood everything that was thrown at them and got the 1-0 win. To be fair, both of them managers are under scrutiny and rightly so for different reasons. I think that I would argue that neither of them are particularly secure in their jobs at the moment. Mm. But that doesn't mean that either of them are under an immediate threat. I don't think they are. But I also feel there's probably more chance if a decision was to be made swiftly that it would be Nuno Espirito Santo whose job was more precarious, just because I don't think there's any feeling at Arsenal that they want to make a change. Whereas were things to go south at Spurs, Daniel Levy might think that he's got to be seen to be proactive. Now, I'm not saying that there's any way that he wants to do that or is even thinking about it. I just think because he was clearly not first, second, third or even fourth choice to take over the club, that it might be easier to dispense with him if things go wrong. My issue with his football is it's all so reactive. But it always was at Wolves. They got the best results against the better teams when they didn't have to make the game. And thus far, I've seen in the last few weeks a Spurs side that looked lacking in inspiration and thought, not helped, let's be honest, by the fact that he had seven players missing for different reasons against Crystal Palace, and that Chelsea are a really, really good side and probably the best side in the league. And that showed in the second half on Sunday, whereas in the first half, at least they played a bit.
Mm. And like maybe what endorses your point even more is that maybe things are coming right slightly for Arsenal. Look, again, you have to sort of look at the quality of opposition, whereas, and look at with extenuating reasons for Tottenham season hasn't really begun yet.
Well, they got away with three results that were flattering at the start of the season. I think realistically they didn't perform that well. They then had a very poor performance at Palace where they got what they deserved. Played well for 45 minutes actually against Chelsea. And if they score a goal, it's a really interesting game. But someone just reminded me that football lasts for 90 minutes, not 45, and you've got to do that for longer. He hasn't had his best first choice team on the pitch at any point yet. So I think he'll be judged more when that happens. That might be this Sunday. I think he'd be under increasing pressure to play Ndombele, despite the fallout when he was trying to get rid of him in the summer. He needs to play Kane where Kane is at his best, rather than playing as of a left half, which where he played on Sunday, which made no sense whatsoever. But he still hasn't got the pace of, and what they really lacked in that second half against Chelsea was an out ball with either Moura or Bergwijn. They needed one more player with legs and didn't have it.
Yeah, And the point about the future of either manager, like a win in this game, obviously buys whoever wins it a good bit of time. Who is going to win it?
Well, Spurs never win at Arsenal, do they? Last time they won was 2010 in the league. Go back then forever, 95, I think. I mean, so you've got to suggest that if there's going to be a winner, it will be Arsenal. It wouldn't shock me if it ended up as a one or a goalless draw. In truth, I think that the fear of defeat might outweigh the desire for victory.
Yeah, that's a fair point. The Chelsea City games is, like, interestingly, two of the biggest games of the weekend going head to head tomorrow in the half 12 matches. We mentioned United Villa a bit earlier, but Chelsea City, two brilliant tacticians. Tuchel with the advantage over Pep over the last four games, and Pep without a raft of players swings the advantage maybe Chelsea's way again.
I think it would have been the advantage in Chelsea's court, irrespective of the injury absences at City at the moment. I think Chelsea looked the most organised, thoughtful, powerful in terms of the collective, not individuals, but also in terms of certain individuals, team in the league. I don't see a weakness in Chelsea's squad at all. I think that they have, fueled now by belief, they feel that they have what it takes. They have the extra goal threat in Lukaku. Their midfield options are, given the way they play, are quite dizzying, actually. They're really well placed defensively. They can play Azpilicueta in the three or in a four. I think they're in a terrific position. City, they, despite 14 different scorers, I still think they could do with one player scoring eight goals, and they haven't got that. They don't have a line leader. The injuries are there. We haven't seen De Bruyne, admittedly, yet this season. We haven't really seen Foden. He only just came back. So they could be improvements. But something seems to be slightly awry there. Mm. We saw that the first weekend against Spurs. We saw it last week against Southampton. When they're good, they're very, very good. But when they're bad, they're horrid. Or maybe not horrid, but they're ordinary. And I think Chelsea will feel that they can capitalise on the weaknesses and limitations in that City side.
Yeah, you do feel that the Harry Kane stuff might come more into focus as the season advances, as you say, in terms of that goal scoring bit. What the we mentioned the players, and look at some of them, there's five or six of them first team players that some of them might be fit again for this weekend, and we don't know. But that notwithstanding, the big thing obviously after the Champions League defeat last year was that Pep had overthought it. Is there any chance that without those players that suddenly his options are much more limited than they would have been, and that might in some way help City or help him?
Well, it does mean he has to pick the obvious team, perhaps. But then again, he doesn't like doing the obvious things, does he? He wants permanent reinvention. He feels it's an intellectual, footballing, tactical, managerial challenge to outwit the opponent. And sometimes you just want to put your best players on the pitch in their best positions, but that's not the way he thinks. He wants to be... He's never satisfied, and that's why he doesn't last too long at any club, because he always wants to challenge himself. I think that whatever he does, whatever team he puts out, they are going to have to perform exceptionally well to avoid defeat at this Chelsea side at the moment. Mm. I think Chelsea are just the best team in the league from what we've seen thus far. But it is only mid-September. Things can evolve and change. Players can go out of form. But Chelsea seems to have more players in form than anybody else. And I think it's going to be really, really tough. And if you offer City a draw, I suspect they would take it. Chelsea wouldn't settle for a draw. They expect to win this game.
Martin, just to ask you about when we're on the topic of Arsenal a moment ago. Arsene Wenger, some interesting comments from him. I think he was speaking to Dan Rowan at the BBC. About, I guess, the future of football and different proposals that he has for changing the world game. I know this, biennial World Cup every couple of years, even years, is one of the ideas. And then guaranteed rest periods for players as well once tournaments are over. Like, what have you made of his proposals generally? Like, are there any you kind of agree with, disagree with? Maybe the World Cup one in particular.
The thing that I really think is an excellent idea is fewer international breaks. I don't like one international break for the entire year in October, but I do like the secondary proposal, which would be a break in October and a slightly shorter one in March. I've long argued for three blocks of international football, autumn, spring and summer. And I think that has merit in a myriad of ways. It also creates more space in the calendar for club football, which is often a demand of the clubs. On the concept of a World Cup every 2 years, I'm quite agnostic about it. I'm not a huge proponent of it, but nor am I a massive opponent. I think it's an idea, and I think it's all, more importantly, I guess, I've looked at the numbers. He's got the votes. Infantino has Africa and Asia and CONCACAF and Oceania, 4 or 5 in South America, and I reckon quite a large number, maybe 20 in Europe. You know, if he wants to push it to a vote and it will come to, I suspect, Congress of FIFA in May, I think it will go through.
Can I ask you just one other question, Martin, before we let you off as well? It was just a story that appears in the back page of the Mail this morning about two-thirds, I don't know if you've seen it, two-thirds of Premier League players having not had the vaccine. And the details of it are that, as it's reported here, Premier League clubs fearing the season could descend into chaos amid ongoing resistance to COVID jabs, with at least two squads having no more than 6 players vaccinated. Definitely stands out on this side of the water. We've been pretty good with getting everything done and the importance of having sports teams almost advocate on behalf of it. It seems like this is very much not the case here. Now, there are some teams, and they talk about Wolves, Brentford and Leeds having huge percentages of their squads vaccinated. But both in terms of the message and the potential impact on the track in terms of players been out, this feels like it definitely took me back, I have to say, to see that there are that many within squads not vaccined.
I hope if this is the case, and I'm sure it is, you know, not going to write it without it being true, there should be no postponements allowed for any team for COVID reasons. And if they have to play the youth team, so be it, because it's an absolute abdication and abrogation of responsibility by the individuals concerned and to a degree the club. They should be ordering them to take the jabs. It's not difficult. It isn't going to hurt you. It's a prick in the arm. Get it done. More importantly, it's the health and safety of other people. And to be so selfish, so self-important, to ignore what is a clear benefit for yourself and others is inconceivably stupid, idiotic and selfish. And I have no sympathy whatsoever for any players or clubs who suffer as a result of this. It's unacceptable.
Do you think some of it, Martin, we had a bit of a debate over here over the last few weeks at one of our men GAA teams who went on to win the All-Ireland Football Championship here, and whether many of them had the vaccine or not, and the story had emerged that maybe a lot of them hadn't taken it because it might negatively impact on their preparation for the game. And I see Tyson Fury saying that he's only going to take one jab ahead of the Wilder fight and he'll get the other one afterwards. Do you think that, or is it a philosophical objection to it?
Oh, I think it's the former. I think they're worried about performance. Then get it done in the summer when you had the chance, when you're not playing for a month. That's the ridiculous nature of it. They could have done it at any point since... Once you had we've got 80%, I think, have had at least one jab in the UK, 65% or so have had two jabs. The vaccine's been readily available since widely available for anybody, and it's free... Since July, there's no reason not to have had it by now. There really isn't. I know that there were certain, I think it was 10 people in the British Olympic team didn't have it. A couple of those, I think, were boxers. They were worried that it would impact on them because the time that they were offered it was 2 weeks or 3 weeks before the Olympics. Well, that was in the close season for football. They could easily have had the injection then. There is a danger of long COVID. There's players like Cardallo talked about it. If I hear a player whinging about, oh, it's not fair, I got COVID and it's hurt me. Well, why didn't you take the injection? If you've had the vaccine and you still get it, I'll listen to you. If you don't, shut up. It's your own fault. Stop moaning. You're responsible for yourself. Do not look for sympathy when you don't have the intelligence to do what the world, every scientific expert, every genuine person with knowledge, and not the idiots who get their news source from TikTok and Facebook, are telling you to do.
Yeah. Martin Lipton, thanks a million.
Thanks, cheers.
Martin Lipton of The Sun. With some strong thoughts on that, and there are plenty of comments coming into us as well about it this morning. People have an opinion about it, and that is absolutely fine and fair. Plenty of opinion as well on Owen's lateness this morning. Fair play, Owen, sleeping in for a 6:40 p.m. flight. Sounds like a great night out, says Brian King there, Shaney's. I mean, it's fair enough. Stephen Fraser says, go easy on Owen, lads. Poor chap. Must have had the worst fear, which is fair enough. And somebody else wondering about his... did Shaheen swipe right in Paris, wonders Dara O'Toole. Seems to be a bit of the vibe. But look, he's not on the line to either defend or explain himself. So let's not go too deep on to that one. Although there is another one here on YouTube, says, don't believe a word he's saying. You can walk from one end of Paris to another in a few hours. He was definitely up to something. There was Shane, I don't know about you, but I felt, you know, we weren't getting the full story there.
Yeah, there's a few holes in the story, but I guess that's something that the screenwriters will kind of tie up when they chat to him ahead of the Netflix special. They'll kind of loosen up all these because there are gaps, certainly gaps, and a lot of people, like, there were suggestions on Twitter that maybe he might call Vince McMahon for a private jet or you know, Owen's fairly famous, you know, certainly in Kerry and Irish circles, he's fairly famous, and I guess that's why he was tweeting the airline directly. He was trying to use that clout to get a special favour, stop the plane, a la Ross, Rachel in Friends style, but it just didn't happen for him. And as he said, and it's a rugby term, but he will take learnings from it, and you'd imagine he won't let it happen again. But look, you could be stuck in worse cities than Paris.
Ah, listen. Right, as always, John Giles joined Nathan on last night's OTB. This week they spoke about the passing of the great Jimmy Greaves during the week. The news that John's former teammate as well, Joe Kinnear, which had come out in the last 48 hours, has been diagnosed with dementia as far back as 2015. And here is John on why football has to do more to look after players, especially the older generation.
And I don't think people fully understand that, because Bobby Charlton is obviously in a different position maybe, in that he had a role at Manchester United, a very high profile role within the club, but like that a Nobby Styles, with all that he achieved, one of English football's greatest ever players, is maybe worrying about money in his 60s and 70s.
Well he was long before that.
Yeah,
he was worried about money. Nobby never did that. Most of us have played. I mean, I was very lucky. I fell into television.
Yeah.
Nobby was lucky enough. He was a good after-dinner speaker.
Right.
So Nobby made a living.
Touring the country.
Around the country, because he was very popular. And he was brilliant at it. You know, he was really brilliant at the after-dinner speaking. That's how Nobby made his money. Apart from that, you know, all the lads, I'd say, I can't remember a lad that I played with out of my time that finished football financially secure.
Put the feet up. Yeah.
Didn't happen. See, we were on, like, we were on those days. We were on good money in relation to what people were working. Say we were on 100 quid a week.
Mm.
Right. That was big money, right, in that time. But there was a lot of tax involved, honestly. Nobody that I knew of could say, when they finished playing, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Nobody. And then the clubs, you see, the clubs were... I never heard of a club being generous.
Yeah, of giving what they weren't forced into.
You're finished, you're done, your day's done, you're no good to us anymore, out you go. And what a lot of the directors in that was saying, you're lucky that you paid you that much, because you're only playing football.
Yeah. Right now then, like, is there anything you can do? Have you spoken to anyone else around this about, actually, as former players, could we all come together and set up a new union, set up a former players union, do something to put a pressure on the clubs, the PFA, to make sure that, because it's not just players now who are in their 80s or 70s. I'm sure there's plenty of players in their 50s and 60s who aren't financially secure, who are all going to be worrying about what they're reading in the papers.
But it's changed so much, Nathan. Now, like, if you said to the lads today, come on, we've got to do something about this.
But maybe nobody's asking them.
Well, maybe not. But certainly, you see, the Professional Footballers Union has been very badly run with Gordon Taylor. I mean, he's been kicked out now. Now, there's a new guy who's just come in. He's only there 4 months. So we have to see now, is he going to do anything about it? But in the meantime, see, the top class players, Nathan, and they're on 200 grand, 300, some on 400, 500 grand a week. So it's not a problem for them. Mm.
John Giles talking to Nathan last night. You can check out the full piece, download the OTB Sports app and just scroll along to the podcast and you'll find John. Full piece, brilliant piece from last night again as usual. A couple of comments in on the back of Martin Lipton's comments there. Martin says, Noel on Twitter, completely correct and off the ball this morning about clubs having no excuses for COVID issues while their players aren't responsible enough to get vaccinated. And then you get the stuff like David McLean on YouTube saying sports commentators should stick to talking about sports, not public health. And then some sort of abuse to follow that as well. Look, you get all sorts. And that's the type of sentiment that's coming into us this morning. Do keep your comments coming in wherever it is you are watching us. You are watching OTB AM. It is 8:53 and we're brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. John Duggan, good morning to you.
Adrian, how you doing?
I don't know where to begin with you, but let's kick off with the North London Derby because we've just been talking to Martin about it and a bit of a sense that it's a monster game for both managers.
Yeah, I'm completely apathetic though about Tottenham at the moment. I don't see, it's the Marie Celeste, it's adrift. Harry Kane isn't playing well. There's no creative spark in the team. Nuno has a huge job there, and how much time will Daniel Levy give him? I think a lot of the Pochettino era was wasted, and Pochettino didn't get the money back in 2017 when he required it. And Tottenham are a club that's really struggling for almost an identity at the moment and a creativity in their team. I don't know how Romero is going to get on, the defender who played so well in Italy last year, this season. But I'd be a little bit worried if, as from a Spurs perspective going into Sunday's game. The Arsenal project is out to the jury at the moment, but I would have seen a little bit of a positivity in the last couple of games from Arsenal. Kept a couple of clean sheets. They've brought all these new signings into the team. There seems to be a bit more of a shape to what he's doing with Ben White and Gabriel in the centre of defence, with Tierney there as well, with a holding player like Partey, and then he's got attacking players like Saka. Aubameyang needs to show better form than he did last season, but maybe we're seeing slight signs that that might happen. I'd actually think Arsenal are favourites on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's a fair enough comment. They've shown a little bit of form and maybe Tottenham haven't quite, and I think no matter who gets over the finish line and the game is live on News Talk on Sunday evening, that whoever gets over the finish line then will have the bragging rights, obviously, but also might be a little less apathetic, JD. You know, these things.
I'm going over on Sunday week to the Villa game, so I'll have a better sense then. Like, an amazing stadium. They've run the football club as a business magnificently over 20 years, but the product on the pitch has not mirrored that. They've had one trophy in 20 years. Chelsea have won 17 major trophies.
Yeah, Chelsea probably the team to watch out again. The Ryder Cup, obviously, you've been tweeting about this and you're buzzing and we're all absolutely excited for it. So the narrative here, and I've watched a lot of the build-up over the last while, and the presentation teams always go back to the exact same point. It's the Owl lads who are very crafty and very wise and have lots of experience in the Ryder Cup and are hugely passionate against the best team ever on paper.
If you want something more in life than the other person, are you going to get it? Are you going to have a better chance at getting it? That's what this boils down to. Do Europe love it more? Do Europe want it more? Do they have more of a collective? As Roy McIlroy said, they're playing for each other. Are the Americans, can you say, 1 to 12 playing for each other?
Brooks says that doesn't matter. I watched his press conference yesterday. He said, that doesn't matter. I go out on the golf course and I play better golf than the other guy and we win.
Well, I think it matters in the foursomes, which is why Steve Stricker has the positive aspect that Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth have been friends since they were kids. They'd played well despite the defeat in Paris. Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay are good mates. That's two of the four pairings. Marikawa and Dustin Johnson, Marikawa is a really nice fella. By all accounts, you'd have to think that their games would be suited because Dustin's so good off the tee and Morikawa is such an excellent iron player. And then Daniel Berger and Brooks Koepka get on apparently. So they don't all have to get on. And then you're moving into best ball and then you're moving into singles. So I do think the Americans, on the basis of the fact that they've got better players, do have an advantage. It is hard to beat them at home. I know we did it at Medina, but in 08 and 16, they were comprehensive winners at home. I think the course will, it looks like a links course. If the wind does get up, it will maybe help the Europeans. But apart from that, the fairways will be wide, the greens will be faster. And also, you got to take into account European players, a lot of them are not playing well. Lee Westwood, Matt Fitzpatrick, Tyrrell Hatton, Tommy Fleetwood, none of them have been playing well. Can they get the magic of being in that team room and just reset? Possibly. And let's hope they do.
Yeah, and Stricker has set it up for his boys, obviously. That's the point. We'll see. It's all kicking off just after one today, so we're going to keep a very close track of that. And between the two, you better give us the big sell for the show over the weekend.
Yeah, well, tomorrow we've got Dennis Kerwin coming in from Whistling Straits to update us on the Ryder Cup football. Can't wait for a discussion between David Myler, Republic of Ireland international, Shane Keegan and Johnny Ward on the two major games which we have at lunchtime tomorrow. So Chelsea, Man City, the repeat of the Champions League final, Man United against Aston Villa, so football Saturday, 3 to 5, and a really good panel for, like, I suppose, celebrating Sport Ireland campus. And you kind of forget about the facilities, the high performance, the training that they have there. We got Robbie Henshaw, Leinster and Lyon, an Ireland player. We got Nat Nguyen, badminton Olympian, and Greta Sri Makita, the Paralympian 1500 metres runner, to speak also about the return of indoor sports. So we're looking forward to that tomorrow between 1 and 5 on News Talk on OTB. And then, as you say, Adrian, on Sunday, the North London Derby between Arsenal and Tottenham Hotspur.
All right, JD, we were to get an update from what's happening in the rest of the world of sport, but we're bang out of time. But that was good stuff. Thanks, million. Enjoy that over the weekend. Really looking forward to all of that, the football and the Ryder Cup as well. A bit of a sense of what's coming up on OTB Sports Radio today. 1 o'clock, OTB Gold, the life and times of Johnny Kilbane there, the Achill man. We know all about the Kilbanes from Achill. 3 o'clock, Friday Night Racing. Frankie Dettori is going to be in the hot seat with John and Johnny today, so you do want to stay tuned for that at 3 o'clock. 4 o'clock, Team 33 League of Ireland legend is the Roscommon man, John Caulfield. And at 6, OTB Gold is Emmanuel Petit back in the hot seat for that. So up next, it's golf, it's Ryder Cup, and it's Peter Lawrie.
OTB
AM. Yeah, 3 minutes past nine, you're watching OTB AM, and we've Peter Lawrie on the way in just a couple moments time to talk golf. But to let you know what's happening across the back pages and on otbsports.com this morning, here it is. Yapstam, Ole should not treat Ronaldo like a normal player, so let him at it if he wants to have an influence around the dressing room, is the story there from the former Manchester United defender. The two things you need for success are confidence and ignorance. That's Dudley Stokes, an interview with Nathan last night that we're bringing your way in just a little bit. He's from the famous Cool Runnings team. Bolton Wanderers severing all ties with the gambling industry, and John Giles' thoughts on how the PFA have failed Joe Kinnear and the likes of Joe Kinnear. Now, across the back pages this morning, I'm going to start with the Irish Independent. The big story here, tally on Jack's Kerry ticket. So there's a confirmation that Paddy Talley is going to feature on the ticket of Jack O'Connor should he get the Kerry gig. Interviews were had midweek this week. It looks like we're going to have an announcement on who's actually going to get the gig at some point over the weekend, so the white smoke will go up and away we go. And there are a couple of other contenders there. We'll come back to that story in just a couple of moments time, but it is really the golf that dominates across the lot of the back pages today. Europe can defy odds, it's what they do. Philip Reid reporting here from Whistling Straits. As you can see, the lads out practicing. Rory there on the course yesterday, and lots more on the golf, and a preview of the rugby as well inside there. The Herald, tally on Kerry ticket. Koepka fuels the Shambo feud narrative. I mean, he'll come out now and say he didn't do that, but I think really what happened was he didn't sort of bat it out of the park, and definitely didn't say that this is not an ongoing thing between the two of us. He didn't go that far at all. And also, it's also in the Irish Independent this morning, Ian Henderson saying that Warren Gatland got the tactics wrong with the Lions. Obviously, somebody who didn't play in the tests, and said he was upset about that, but also said that Gatland got it wrong. Alpha Male, Postman will deliver. So we mentioned some criticisms of Ian Poulter, but he's saying he is going to deliver for them. And Rooney slams Rams chief. This is Wayne Rooney not been able to contact the Derby County owner. In fact, at some point had to pretend that he was a doctor and phone his office and not been able to get him. And then when he did get him, he was felt as if he had been fobbed off. Let's get ready to ramble. Top of the morning for you there on the Irish Mirror this morning. John Rahm has vowed to be the silent assassin at the Ryder Cup, without being all that silent, of course. And three and easy as Hoops Isle Old Firm Derby. That was Celtic beating Raith last night. Rambo. This is the Sun, the Irish Daily Sun this morning. World number one, John, ready to launch all-out attack on Team USA. Blockbusters is the common theme here between that. And Joshua, scared of Usyk, I'd take on the King Kong. So that's the thoughts of Anthony Joshua, obviously heading into an interesting, very interesting few weeks of boxing. The Examiner, plenty of the golf inside there as well. Party Poopers, McIlroy, Ram and Co. ready to silence US rider Roar. Ram Raid has the Irish Daily Mail this morning. No room for Lowry as Spanish duo lead off. And two-thirds of Premier League stars have not had the vaccine, was the story we were talking to Martin Lipton about earlier on. It's exclusive here by Sammy Mockbell and Matt Hughes inside, where they talk about some squads having no more than six players vaccinated. That is definitely one that we'll be coming back to again. I've no doubt about that. Poulter lays down the challenge to US, bring on the hostility. This is the Telegraph this morning. Poulter cupping his hand to his ear as he eggs on the US fans that largely, I think, between the cheese heads, the throwing in of the golf balls and everything else in between, that Europe been on really much more of a charm offensive, it felt to me, over the last while. Rooney slams disrespectful Morris Derby. That's amid Derby chaos. That's in The Guardian, and much more the same golf and the football inside as well on the other papers, The Times. But one story just to mention, Shane, was the tally on Jack's Kerry ticket story from Cullum Keys in the Irish Independent this morning. It's the interviews have been had, so whatever you've had to say at this point has been done. Tickets have been revealed, and an announcement to come, it seems, over the weekend. But the point on that one specifically is that Paddy Talley, obviously Tyrone, from Tyrone, just given up the down job, and obviously has had other experience as well in the intercounty scene, is ready to go. He's on Jack O'Connor's ticket. That seems to be, like, it felt as if that was the maybe strongest ticket in the game, if you assume that Peter Keane isn't getting it, and, like, who knows, that was a strong ticket already, and the Paddy Talley possibly tips that one over the edge.
Yeah, like Paddy Talley getting involved now is fascinating, because we thought with the Stephen Stack one with Donny Buckley and Seamus Moynihan and Darrow Canadia that was the A-list, Hollywood A-listers. But, I mean, Paddy Talley is an extraordinary football brain. And as you said, look, he's based in Tyrone. I think he's taken a career break this year, so that would kind of free him up a little bit to take this role with Kerry if it so happens. Like, he was on Off the Ball weekend during the summer covering one of the matches for us. He's an extraordinary GA brain. And someone who just reads the game very well. I remember the great story about Paddy when he was involved with the Tyrone setup in 2003 when they won that first All-Ireland. And I think it was the night before the final, and he got, was it all 30 members of the Tyrone panel to write down on a piece of paper one positive thing or one nice thing about each of their teammates, put them all in an envelope, and then the morning of the match, the morning of the All-Ireland final, each player woke up under their pillow like the Tooth Fairy had arrived, an envelope with 30 or 35 positive things about them, which, you know, they must have been on cloud nine getting the bus to Croke Park. But those are the little things that Paddy Talley picks up on, and you can't underestimate those things. Like, for a coach to do something like that, and you've seen with what he's done with different counties, and he was quite unlucky with Down not to get to an Ulster final last year. They were certainly far ahead of Cavan in that Ulster semi-final, probably should have got there in the end. He is an extraordinary coach. To be alongside Jack O'Connor as well, that's a ticket a lot of Kerry fans wouldn't turn down. And I think those two would work quite well together. Like, I don't know what the vibe is in Kerry in terms of what people prefer, because as far as I can see, spoiled for riches. Like, clearly up in Monaghan here, we don't want to let Donny Buckley go, because Banty has signed on for another year in charge, and Donny Buckley is still part of that backroom team as things stand. A coach with a lot of experience, and I know he's had he left Kerry a couple of years ago or last year, and not the best circumstances. But I don't even know what one they would prefer. This Jack O'Connor Paddy Talley one for me is the standout one now. But yeah, it remains to be seen over the weekend. They could go anyway.
Well, that one, the Donny Buckley one, is Stephen Stack as manager, and Buckley, Seamus Moynihan, and Dara Kaneda as the coaches there. So, like, I'm sorry to say, Donny is looking across the ballroom floor there, and he's giving a bit of a wink and a nod across the room and saying, listen, are you dancing? And Monaghan are his backup plan. But look, I mean, he might need to, that might need to come into play. And also, the other bit of news from that article is that Kieran Donaghy won't be part of
any Jack O'Connor ticket, or indeed any ticket at all in relation to Kerry, because as it says here, he's given commitments to coach Armagh for another year. So it will be interesting to see when that generation of players come through, like Moynihan and O'Kaneda kind of touch on it a little bit, but that generation of players, the Donaghy, maybe even O'Shea's, Paul Galvin, when that generation start to get involved, and that's presumably the next step after whoever it is that comes in at this stage. But we'll see, and we'll keep an eye on it. But that's the back page of the Irish Independent this morning. I want to bring it your way. But right now, at almost 12 minutes past nine, delighted to say, golf star of Golf Weekly, Peter Laurie, joins us on the line. Good morning to you, Peter.
Morning, morning. I doubt the star of Golf Weekly, but we're certainly on Golf Weekly.
I didn't say the star, to be fair. I said star of, right. You know.
Okay.
You're about to head into Spawell there, are you? Or are you in the school run?
No, school run. I've just kicked all the children out, decided that you take precedent. So good. Children come out first, you know.
That's as it should be. Well, I presume that's going to put us under a time limit. So let's get straight into it, right? Obviously, the pairings announced last night. Can I ask you, first of all, I've listened to the last episode of Golf Weekly, and I understand the side that you're on, which is US are going to spank Europe here. I presume that watching I think I'm directly quoting you there, if I'm not wrong, so I don't want to misrepresent you. But I presume, having watched the pairings emerge last night, it has not altered your view.
Look, I suppose when you look at how strong the American team is, and you look at the European team, and you think to yourself, you know, if you're a betting man, you've got to go with the quality and the guys who are playing the best at this moment in time. The foursomes pairings, really, you know, they're so strong in every department. America are. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, Europe, great opening team, you know, the two Spaniards leading Europe out. But, you know, you have to question, and somebody made the point last night, was Garcia will be putting first. And, you know, if all goes to plan, he'll be putting first in the holes initially starting out. And he's the worst putter on tour. So, you know, you just have to wonder, you know, is it the best partnership, or, you know, was there a better putter to be put with John Rahm?
Yeah, well, all the talk after it was like, oh, the two hitters, the top two groups, this is an incredible match-off. But Garcia stands out like a sore thumb in the company, the other three almost.
Absolutely. You know, and look, he could do a Colin Montgomery. Colin Montgomery out on tour was always struggled with the putter. Once he came through the Ryder Cup, he became the best putter in the absolute universe. And we've seen that over the years. So look, we'll wait and see. My heart wants to, you know, say Europe are going to do it, but my head is just too strong in relation to facts, figures, and form.
Yeah. And the big case, watching the coverage last night and everything I've read and listened to and watched, has been about, you get the I was saying to John Duggan earlier on, the Owl lads on one side, and they're crafty and they have a lot of experience, like 11-time Ryder Cup player, obviously, was the announcement last night as they worked through the various Lee Westwood, the various matchups. Like, there's a lot of experience there, and there's all that, and there's the passion and all that on one side versus this clinical quality on the other side. Is that what it boils down to for you, Peter? And is there any way to, like, on paper it's America's, is there any way that passion and that craft and that experience bridges the gap, or no?
No, there is. Look, the golf course is going to play into Europe's hands. You'd have to admit. It's that linksy type feel, you know what I mean? So if the wind blows, you know, form really comes away, you know, that it's about kind of street fighters, you know what I mean? How to get pars, how to control the ball in the wind and stuff like that. Europe are brilliant at that. Now, not saying the Americans aren't as good at it, but Europe have probably, European players have been in those conditions a little bit more. putting becomes exceptionally difficult in the wind. Again, Europe have had more experience than that. So, like, I for one, always a decent putter, but put a bit of wind in there and you'd always struggle. So there is conditions where Europe will, you know, get a little bit closer to the, you know, the 50-50 position that, you know, you think Ryder Cups are. But I just personally feel that this is a much together, much more together American team than there probably has ever been. Tiger, Mickelson out of the, you know, the male dominance that they had in the team room, and you have guys coming together who are not overawed by, you know, your Mickelson or your Tiger. They can come out of their shells. So look, you know, my heart wants to go with Porik, and it absolutely does, and Europe. But, you know, as you said, or as I say, your head has to your head has to look at the facts and figures.
Peter, myself, and Adrian were talking about the smile on Shane Lowry's face last night, lighting up the opening ceremony, and to see him then not picked as one of these foursome players, like, disappointing for him, I'm sure. A lot of people online kind of suggesting this is a benching or him being dropped or whatever, but he will play a role in this Ryder Cup. Were you disappointed to see him not picked as one of the foursomes?
I was. I honestly thought, and the lads laughed at me yesterday, I honestly thought he'd be put with Ram. You know, Shane he's a great ball striker. He's very easy to play golf with. You know, he'd know John Ram quite well. His putting has improved dramatically over the last while. I certainly would have been putting him foursomes with Ram out first, let it go. You know, British Open winner. Shane excels on the big stage. You know, he's a big stage player. And I was just surprised.
Does it suggest, Peter, that he's that Harrington's almost worried that the occasion might get the better of Larry?
No, I think Porik has put an awful lot of faith into Garcia. And I'm surprised because, like, he spoke about putting two countrymen together, you know. Just because they're countrymen doesn't mean that they're going to be the best partnership. So, like, I am quite surprised at that one, I have to admit. I personally didn't see Garcia and Ram. I saw Ram and Lowry. Because I looked at the partnerships going out in the practice rounds, and it was Shane, Garcia, Ram, and can't remember the fourth. Was it? Wasn't Victor Hovland? Was it? No, it was.
Cyril Hatton, was it maybe?
Yeah,
The top four out from Europe: Ram, Garcia, and then Casey Hovland.
No. In the practice rounds, I was talking.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it just smacked to me that Ram and Larry would play together.
It's that type of tournament.
But yeah, so I think. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, you mentioned Victor Hovland there, and like it's not an issue that he feels like Lowry can't be thrown in because it's his first Ryder Cup. Because, I mean, Victor Hovland is in the exact same position, and he's thrown him in with Paul Casey against Dustin Johnson. Morikawa is hardly the easiest of foursomes to win, but clearly, the Ryder Cup, throwing someone in who's you know, it's their opening tournament, he has no issues about Victor Hovland. Like, that surely that wasn't the issue with Larry, that he thought, you know, this is his first Ryder Cup, maybe the occasion is too much, because clearly with Hovland, he's just felt like he is ready to go.
He is. I also think there's the big thing of having to play. You know, Porik suggested it on when we did the interview and off in the Golf Weekly show, that he would definitely play everybody the first day. And there's also that pressure of having to match everybody up. So, you know, like, Shane is definitely going to play four ball.
Who's his likely partner for that? Rory?
To be honest with you, I don't know. To be honest with you, going by now, it's who do the rookies play with? Like, there's there's Shane on bench, Tyrrell Hatton on bench, Brent Wiesberger on the bench, and who's the fourth that's has to come in?
It's a good question.
It's Fleetwood, Tommy Fleetwood.
Fleetwood, yeah.
Tommy Fleetwood. So would it be Tommy and Shane?
Could be.
But are you going to bench? Are you going to bench Rory or John Ram for the four balls?
Well, I presume Sergio, Casey, Westwood maybe because he's 74, and maybe Poulter could be obvious ones to come out.
Well, definitely Poulter. Matt Fitzpatrick and Lee Westwood probably come out as two, and also Garcia.
Yeah, rest them up.
You know, so there's your four goes into those slots.
Poulter, I don't know, you watching Brandel Chamblee last night, but he kind of went through Poulter for a shortcut about him being the worst ball striker that you mentioned a bit earlier on there of the 24 and by some distance as well. Actually, my main thought afterwards was, if Peter, and it will get back to him, if Ian Poulter has heard this, you know, the chest thumping is going to be at an all-time high. But it is the sort of thing that he is the sort of player that plays off that thing. He is the embodiment of all that stuff that we're talking about the European passion and playing above yourself.
Ian Poulter has played above himself all his career. And he is, my hat is off to Ian Poulter. Personally, he wouldn't be I wouldn't be in a rush to go out to dinner with him, but he is. He just, to me, he's the person to look up to for any young player out there to look up to see how good you can actually get with an average game. Because he just believes he could, if he can walk through walls, that man will walk through walls. And that's how strong a mentality that guy has. And it's a wonderful attribute. I wish I had it in my career, because I would have been twice the player I was. And it's something that is a necessity to be where he is. But I totally agree that this is his third time to be picked for the Ryder Cup, third time not to have qualified. And I worry about this golf course for Ian Poulter. I really do.
Sorry, go on, Peter. Keep going.
No, I was just to say, when Pora came out and he said to the world that he had 12 great ball strikers. I'm going, what is he talking about? where is he getting this? But there again, Pora, as I said the other day on the show, Pora has always had this attitude. He builds up the media in a different way and builds himself up in the background a different way. Like, Pora could never come out and say he's playing great. Never, ever. Mm. He'd always say there's some part of his game that's missing or some part of it's not working or he's playing crap. And all of a sudden, you know, he wins a major. I remember playing with Pora Carrington in US Open in the Olympic Club, 2010, 2012, can't remember. And the fella didn't hit one decent shot in two practice rounds. And I thought to myself, wow, how's this guy going to get around the golf course? You know, he had a chance to win the tournament coming down the 72nd hole. So that's the kind of mentality that Pora Carrington has.
That's something I was going to touch on, actually. Like, Peter, the mentality of Podrick, I guess when you're watching Ryder Cup build-up and, like, as we've been soaking it all in the last few days, you're kind of watching the captains with beady eyes, trying to spot any little bits of nervousness or flaws. Like, have you noticed anything from Stricker or from Harrington in the build-up that would lead you to worry about either of them, lead you to be confident about either of them? Like, who would you rather be playing under at this tournament?
Oh, you'd probably prefer to play under Porik because he's given us, you know, every kind of thought possible. Steve Stricker, I think we're all learning about Steve Stricker, of the type of person that he is. Like, he's a complete family man. We see, you know, a Twitter feed there that he was out caddying for his daughter, going for, tour school. But this is the guy who came back from nothing. Like, he went through a career slump probably bigger than most, and came back and has a longevity now in his career that is second to none. You know, he plays 12 times a year at most and is in contention 11 of them. You know, he's that type of player. So Steve Stricker is a little bit different to Porrick. Porrick, as you said, or as you know, you would like to probably play under Porrick. Steve Stricker is probably a more introvert person.
Just before we wrap up, a couple of quick ones. First of all, two players that from either side that you think are going to have a Leona Maguire this week. So whether it's form or experience or whatever, who's going to hoover up the points on either side?
I think Xander Schauffele will probably be leading point scorer in America. And I probably would say Victor Hovland will be probably the European's Leona Maguire. He's a good player, good attitude, and these conditions will suit him.
And like you're on the record as Europe are going to get spanked. So are we even going to get a knock a Sunday out of it, or is it? What's your sense? Is it how close?
I'm very concerned, to be honest with you. We spoke about doing a watch along on Sunday, and I'm very concerned about it, to be honest. You know, are we going to just talk about it getting to you know, where it's respectable? But look, I've been wrong in the past and hope I'm wrong this time, but as I said to you, the bookies are heavily favouring the Americans right now.
Okay, very good. Well, look, I hope you're wrong, obviously, and I know you hope you're wrong.
So do I.
Exactly, yeah. Right, good man. Finish off the school run. Enjoy the golf.
All right, thanks, lads.
Peter Laurie, a quarter, as it said in his caption there, a quarter of Golf Weekly. And by the way, a reminder that Golf Weekly is very much the place to be if you're a golf fan at all. But certainly, if you're into your Ryder Cup coverage, you can sign up to our Patreon, otbsports.com/Golf Weekly, or just head over to Patreon and type in Golf Weekly and you'll find it there. $3.99 a month. And yeah, you're going to get loads of stuff this week. There's the preview pod up there. If you want to scroll back a little bit, there's the Porrick Harrington conversation from last week. Also, lads, I've got a watch along, as Peter said there. So on Sunday, as the groups get ready to go out in the tee, the lads will be online and we'll preview the final day's action for you, and a special review pod as well on Monday. So plenty there for you, $3.99 a month. And by the way, a reminder as well that our Ryder Cup coverage is brought to you in association with Sky Sports. Watch the Ryder Cup exclusively on Sky Sports to join our upgrade today and get Sky Sports for just €20 a month for 6 months. Search Sky Sports Golf or visit Sky Sports Golf, skysports.com/golf. So that's that is that, and almost it from us for this morning. Shane, I did watch yesterday. You were mentioning about the smile of Shane Lowry. He just about pipped the joy of Graham McDowell, bizarrely.
G-Mac looked like he was ready to have a few cold beers.
Or maybe he's ready. Had a few cold beers.
Yeah, well, Steve Stricker admitted to having a few cold beers to get him through the speech, but G-Mac will certainly have a couple if Europe come out on top. Porter Carrington said he's going to have a tattoo as well, made out for himself if they win. So he's a tattoo kind of guy, unlike G-Mac. So looking forward to seeing the action this weekend, Adrian. It should be pretty special. So many good pairings to choose from.
Who'd be your favourite now? Who's your favourite on the European team there, G-Mac? For us to press you.
Poulter always delivers, Adrian. He's a postman, as they say, as we like to call him. Rory McIlroy is pretty special. As I said, so many to choose from. Probably Lee Westwood, Matt Fitzpatrick, something along those lines. But definitely, look, it's going to be a good weekend. Break out the cold beers. Enjoy yourselves, folks, and act responsibly.
Act responsibly. Don't drink responsibly. Just, yeah.
I don't know.
you need to work on your lines, G-Mike. Shane, fair play. You were knocked out of bed at 5:25 this morning. I mean, thereabouts. And you performed excellently. So thank you very much for your dedication to work, unlike some others that we won't mention.
Cheers, Adrian. Yeah, Owen owes me one, I think, after this.
That's for sure. Good man. Enjoy your weekend. Reminder, by the way, you saw earlier on there on the snap, you saw Keane and Ronan picking through the NFL this weekend, and the snap brought to you in association with the Aer Lingus College Football Classic, Northwestern up against Nebraska at the Aviva Stadium, the place to be, Saturday, August 27th, 2022. And you can check out the brand new website, collegefootballireland.com, for more details on all of that. And a reminder as well, in case you missed it earlier on, we had that Yap Stan clip that we played. It was all as part of a reminder to keep an eye on our channels this week, because our roadshows are back, and they're all with thanks to Cadbury Ireland, Yap Stam, Albert Morgan, Stephanie Roach, and that will the Stam part of that interview will air this evening, and everything available up on the OTB Football Podcast feed as well, and on our YouTube channel. And you can subscribe to all of that and check out Cadbury FC for much more details. And that is pretty much it from us for this morning. OTB PM, brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. You can keep an eye on OTB today and across the weekend. The best place to listen to and follow everything that happens is the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.